Who hasn't wondered, aside from, say, Georgia O'Keeffe and a few select others, where all the women artists are? In many art books, they've been marginalized or they have been dismissed in the captions of group photographs with the phrase "identity unknown," while each male is named. In the book Identity Unknown, author and editor Donna Seaman brings to life seven of these artists, among the best of their day, but now who have really been forgotten to art history. These women fought to be treated the same as male artists, to be judged by their work, not their gender or appearance. Seaman reveals what drove them, how they worked, and how they were perceived by others in a world where women were subjects, not makers of art. Donna Seaman joins us this morning to discuss the book and her event, which happens this Saturday at 6 o'clock at Oblong Books and Music in Rhinebeck, New York. And it's a great pleasure to welcome Donna Seaman to the roundtable this morning. Donna, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you so much.
Let us begin with what brought you to this subject.
I was raised by an artist. Elaine Seaman is my mother. She's quite well known in the Hudson Valley for
Absolutely.
Her ink paintings. Oh, that's nice to hear. So I grew up surrounded by art, watching an artist make art. I myself was very drawn to that endeavor. Loved to look at art, loved museums. So it's always been a big part of my life.
When it comes to identity unknown, what was important for you in rediscovering these artists, these women artists, and these particular artists, these seven women?
It really began with Louise Nevelson. I saw Louise Nevelson's work when I was a girl. I don't remember exactly where, a museum in New York, I'm sure. And she was a tremendous inspiration to me when I was building things. I did go to art school, and she was everywhere. She was a superstar, a woman artist who really became very famous and then strangely disappeared while her male peers remained in all the art history surveys that came out following her death. I just found that mysterious and a little disturbing. And I started thinking about women artists and the few that attained that sort of fame, the many that, you know, experience success but don't appear in the art history books, that just seem to be erased. And that led me to think about artists whose work I particularly loved, who I realized were just not well enough known.
Talk about the seven that you chose, and ultimately, was there a criteria that you were looking for that they had to meet?
Yes. Well, they were each an artist whose work just really spoke to me, and I came across them by chance, or really because of my ongoing interest in art. I saw a painting by Lois Mailou Jones in the Milwaukee Art Museum, and I did not know who she was. I thought the painting was so striking and interesting. I began researching her, and sure enough, a book came out by her, published by a university press, which I eagerly read. Same with Joan Brown. I believe I saw a painting of hers in a Vassar College gallery show, and then a book about her appeared. And so their work just fascinated me. Gertrude Abercrombie is a Chicago artist. I live in Chicago. I saw her work in a gallery somewhere and had no clue who she was. Christina Ramberg's another Chicago artist. Christina taught at the School of the Art Institute of Chicago, and I did know Christina. I knew a lot of people at the school, faculty, and students. She, like Ree Morton, who also taught there briefly as a visiting artist, both died very young, and I loved their work so much and felt that, you know, because their lives were so shortened, that their work was not getting the critical attention it should, and I felt a real mission about writing about both of them. Lenore Tawney came out of my early fascination with fiber art. I had a really wonderful experience as a student in high school, working with a teacher that was restoring 19th century looms. Fiber art was just kind of coming into its own then, a kind of a brief reign, and Lenore Tawney was a pioneer in that world, and I thought her work was just magnificent. So each of these artists, you know, initially just appealed to me as someone who loves to look at visual art, and then their stories just turned out to be so fascinating and not, you know, not thoroughly told or often told. so I felt there was a place for me in that continuum.
These are all 20th century women artists, and I'm curious as to would they take any umbrage to the use of forgotten or identity unknown, or were they well aware of that at the time?
That's such a great question, and I have to admit that we went round and round about my subtitle, which ended up being Rediscovering Seven American Women
Right.
Artists. I never wanted to say that these were forgotten or neglected or in any way, you know, disparaging, because each of them was very successful in her lifetime. One of my criteria was that I wanted to write about artists that were no longer living, and the 20th century art is just the time that fascinates me the most. So they all fell within that spectrum. But none of them wanted to be identified as women artists either. That was sort of forced upon them, and that's very much part of the stories I try to tell. Everyone wants to be recognized for what they do, not what their gender is or their background.
Hmm.
So that was a big issue for them. The identity unknown is a little bit of a, you know, not a joke, but it's a little coy because, of course, their identities are very well known to many people,
mm-hmm.
But not the public, you know, the reading public I'm hoping to reach, although many people know who Louise Nevelson is. In fact, people ask me why she's in the book, and it's really because there was this kind of blackout on her for a while. Now there's a new biography out about her. All these artists are I'm not the only one rediscovering them because their work is so powerful. But yes, absolutely, they would all not like to be considered forgotten or neglected. But I do hope that the people that knew these artists, loved these artists, will be glad that their stories are being retold.
Realizing that it probably depends on artist to artist, one of the things that you do address in the book, which I find really interesting, is what the expectation was of some of these women as they were working on their careers and working on their art. Give us a sense of some of those expectations, fair and unfair.
Yes, it's so interesting. And I think, of course, this holds true for all creative people. You know, and if you have some success with one initial style, one type of sculpture, one type of painting, or even for that matter, one type of book,
right.
There's a lot of pressure to keep doing that because it's successful commercially, and, you know, perhaps your gallery is depending on that. I think for women artists, the whole question of identity, you know, okay, you're a woman, you know, why are you making art? Why are you kind of breaking the mold, the traditional expectations of women, especially in the mid-20th century and, of course, earlier? You know, what's propelling you and what do you have to say? And each of these artists, when they reached a point where they finally got some acceptance for their work, they would change their style, their subject matter, their approach. And this created great ripples of concern and objections, and it took a lot of courage and, you know, sort of backbone to proceed and follow their artistic vision, whether it was, you know, pleasing others at the moment or not. And of course, they always proved to be right because it's their art and they knew what they needed to make. You know, Joan Brown, as a student, both she and Christina Ramberg were very successful when they were still in art school. They were such talented artists. She was painting abstractions and very wild expressionistic paintings with lots and lots of oil paint. And she moved away from that and started working on very flat, figurative works. You could not even see the brush strokes. She switched from oil paint to actual house paint on Masonite. And this was not a choice that made galleries happy at first, and she proceeded to do it anyway. As soon as Louise Nevelson established herself as someone that made black sculptures, she started painting them white. And this is the freedom of an artist.
What do you think, as I said, you focus on these 20th century women artists. What do you think the reaction would be if you handed this book to a woman artist now who is in the prime of their career in the 21st century, who would read the book and say, thank God that has changed, or, oh my God, this still hasn't changed?
Such a good question. You would get both.
Yeah.
In many ways, women are, there's, you know, much of the objections or just feeling that you were doing something, you know, very outside the norm, that's over in most situations. I'm sure there's communities where there's still a lot of pressure to make your art to the side, that it shouldn't be the main focus of your life. It's very sweet if you want to go paint when you have time, but you have other obligations that are more important. I'm sure that still happens. But I think it's much, women are much freer, even when I was in art school, to pursue art passionately and professionally and full-time. What hasn't changed is that the groups that keep count of these things still report that there are far less women's works shown in museums, far less gallery exhibits of women's work. Women's work on the market, the prices are much lower. And none of those things have changed, in spite of lots of articles and protests and these reports that come out. So it's a very slow process. The valuing, when you get down to monetary matters and gender, it's just so persistent. I mean, women's pay is still lower. The wages and salaries are still lower than men's for the same work. It takes a very long time to change these kind of systemic discriminations.
I know there are several women authors who have said to me, if you look at how many books are published in a year, that it's, say, 55% are by women. And yet, if you look at the New York Times or other major newspapers, the books that are reviewed, it may be about 10 or 15% are by women. Is the same true in the art world for the amount of what you were talking about, the evaluation, but also when it comes to the reviews of the shows, reviews of the galleries, that the art is out there, but it doesn't get the same coverage?
That is true at times, although I think recently in the last few years, I've seen more coverage of women's shows. There have been more women's shows. There's been a real awareness, I think, in newer art writers, some of whom are women, that this work, you know, that women's work is important. I think there's been an improvement in that sphere, and in part because the public really is interested. You know, I think we're in another phase of women's biography and women's history. I'm not alone in writing group portraits of women. We've seen Hidden Figures, which is a really big book right now,
sure.
And there's a film about it. Dava Sobel wrote a book called The Glass Universe about women working at the Harvard Observatory. There's a book called Rocket Girls. I was just looking. You know, it's so funny because I think each of us work in our own, you know, private space. It took me many years to work on this book. I'm doing my research. And then when I emerge from that, I see that I'm surrounded by similar missions and similar books, which is very exciting and which makes me feel that we're taking another step forward together, a lot of people.
Right. And also that there are artists such as yourself who are aware that the culture is ready for this type of exploration.
Exactly. You know, true stories are so compelling. I mean, I'm a great lover of fiction, but true stories are always compelling. People are, you know, all kinds of readers are interested in them. And so many different fields, there's so many unsung heroes and undiscovered talents. And I think, you know, a lot of writers find that really exciting. I certainly do.
So I assume you're looking forward to coming home.
Yes, I always look forward to coming home. I love the Hudson Valley. I, of course, love seeing my family.
Well, you'll be at Oblong Books and Music in Rhinebeck, oblongbooks.com. The event is at 6 o'clock. The name of the book, Identity Unknown, Rediscovering Seven American Women Artists. Donna Seaman, a great pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you so much. Travel safe.
Thank you very much. I look forward to seeing you.
Great pleasure. Thank you very much. Once again, Donna Seaman's new book is Identity Unknown. She has an event this Saturday at 6 o'clock at Oblong Books and Music in Rhinebeck, New York, oblongbooks.com, oblongbooks.com. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.